This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, February 26th, 2013. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
Ahead on Ozarks, the still evolving discussion over expanded Medicaid for Arkansas. Larry Teague, the co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee at the state legislature, talks about Medicaid and the entire budget process.
Plus, putting Go Dog Go on stage in Springdale, and why making a documentary film can be a challenging task that leaves the filmmaker depressed part of the time.
First, Arkansas House Majority Leader Bruce Westerman, a Republican from Hot Springs, brought his controversial bill to cap state spending back up in the House committee this morning. The bill already went through committee but failed to be amended in the House. Representative Westerman says he's been researching other successful spending cap legislation.
I spent a lot of time over the weekend looking at how other states have done spending caps. There are over 30 states that have some kind of a spending cap in place. I'm still looking at data and haven't made up my mind for sure if I will file another amendment on it.
Governor Mike Beebe has come out against the bill, saying it will wreak havoc on the state's budgeting system. The State Department of Finance and Administration also has spoken against it, saying it may have constitutional issues. Westerman says the bill is a response to large increases in state spending and part of an overall tax reform plan.
Legislation to reduce the scholarship amount paid to students from the Arkansas Lottery is now going to the governor for a signature. The new bill would set scholarships in tiers, with freshmen receiving $2,000 and awards increasing by $1,000 per year before capping out at $5,000 in a student's senior year. The program currently pays $4,500 per year. Senator Johnny Key, a Republican from Mountain Home, is the bill's sponsor. Speaking on the Senate floor, Key said changes to the two scholarship amounts have to happen to keep the program going.
A year ago, we left the scholarship amounts at $4,500, but we made clear to everyone that a year from now, which is now, a year from then, we would have to make considerable changes to that scholarship program in order to keep it solvent.
Shane Broadway, interim director of the Department of Higher Education, says the department is waiting to speak to the governor to decide whether it supports the bill, but agrees changes will likely happen to scholarship amounts.
Our biggest issue is ensuring the financial viability of the program. So changes are going to have to be made, and Senator Key, you know, told that. They said that a year ago, and it's, you know, even more so now, because of the situation we're in.
The bill passed 31-2. The governor hasn't indicated whether he will sign it. In its current form, the bill would award qualifying students at two-year institutions $2,000 per year.
New polling results from Talk Business and Hendricks College show Republican Asa Hutchinson leading a pack of candidates for the 2014 governor's race in Arkansas. Republican businessman Curtis Coleman announced his candidacy last week and was not factored into the survey. Jay Barth with the Department of Politics at Hendricks College says Hutchinson bested Democrats Bill Halter and Mike Ross in the poll.
You know, there's been a wind blowing in the Republicans' direction for the last three election cycles, right, in Arkansas. You know, we've seen some indications that partisan identification in the state has shifted in a Republican direction. So, you know, I think undeniably Republicans have an advantage in this environment. That said, you know, Mike Beebe won all 75 counties when he ran for re-election.
Barth says at this early stage, polling results show Asa Hutchinson has the name recognition statewide to be a formidable candidate. About 675 people participated in the statewide survey.
Governor Mike Beebe is back from Washington, D.C., and with him are answers to lawmakers' questions about the state's options for expanding Medicaid under the federal health care law. The governor, a Democrat, supports expansion, but some Republicans want more flexibility in the plan. Representative Charlie Collins of Fayetteville says he and his colleagues want to see more private insurance options.
We've been looking at this for a long time, saying, you know, Medicaid expansion equals a specific thing. Today, it looks like there is a tremendous menu of flexibility, which really means it's a new question, and we need to dig into that.
Collins says he thinks the full Medicaid expansion likely never would have been an option for the state, which is why he says more flexibility from Washington will help lawmakers decide on portions of the Medicaid expansion they feel the state can manage.
Construction could soon begin on another piece of the Razorback Regional Greenway in Rogers if the city council tonight decides to purchase land for the trail segment. The land in question is 10.25 acres just south of the Bridge to the Future. The section of trail in question will extend to Blossom Way Trail from where it ends just south of the bridge to Bellevue Road. Steve Glass is the city's planning and transportation director. He says that this project would bring the city closer to completion of its part of the regional greenway.
It's a vital piece. It's right on the Razorback Greenway Trail. Like I said, it continues south. After this is complete, there will be two more projects to bid out, and they will be, and then that will be it for the City of Rogers projects.
He says that if the land purchase is approved, the trail project will be finished by the end of the year. The Rogers City Council meets tonight at Rogers City Hall.
A program at Fayetteville Public Schools has gained statewide recognition. Last week, the district's Gifted and Talented Education Program was named the Outstanding GT Program in the state for school districts with enrollment of 5,000 or more. The award was given during the 2013 Arkansans for Gifted and Talented Education Conference in Little Rock. It is the sixth time the Fayetteville Gifted and Talented Program has received the award, more than any other school district in the state.
Following three wins in last weekend's series against Evansville, the Razorback baseball team is still ranked near the top nationally. Diamond Hogs are ranked number 2 in polls by USA Today, the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, Collegiate Baseball, and Perfect Game. The team is still ranked number 3 in the Baseball America poll. The Baseball Hogs will return to the field Thursday for 4 games at the Coca-Cola Classic in Surprise, Arizona.
Mostly cloudy tonight with a 20% chance of light snow after midnight in northwest Arkansas. Lows in the upper 20s across the area. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a 20% chance of rain before noon and a high of 39 in northwest Arkansas. Partly sunny with a high near 46 in the Arkansas River Valley. And mostly cloudy tomorrow night with lows in the mid to upper 20s.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, as we just heard, a new Talk Business Hendricks College poll offered some insights into Arkansas politics. 675 voters were asked about their preferences for governor in 2014. Asa Hutchinson, a former congressman from the 3rd District, has announced he plans to seek the GOP nomination for that office. The poll asked voters about his candidacy head-to-head against two Democrats. Against former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter, Asa Hutchinson has a 16-point lead, 47% to 31%, with 22% of respondents saying they didn't know between the two. Against former 4th District Congressman Mike Ross, Asa Hutchinson has a slimmer lead, 5 points, 43% to 38%. While Bill Halter has said he is seeking the Democratic nomination, Congressman Ross has not. Other announced candidates or people considering running for governor were not included in the poll. That poll also found 68% approval for Governor Mike Beebe's job performance and 43% approval of the legislature's job performance. 33% answering say they disapproved of the legislature's job performance.
Also in the poll, an 11-point swing in support for Medicaid expansion in Arkansas since the last Talk Business Hendricks poll. This month's results indicate 53.5% approval and 40% disapproval. The Medicaid expansion discussion is a part of the bigger budget process for the legislature this winter. Last week, Roby Rock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sat down with Larry Teague, a Democrat from Nashville, and co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee at the State Capitol to talk about the budget and Medicaid.
Where do you think you are in the budget process? There still seems to be a long ways to go, which is typical in a session, but this one for some reason feels a little longer in the drag.
I think the budget is moving, not slower than normal, but we haven't tackled any of the big subjects yet. And my assumption is until we decide what we're going to do with Medicaid expansion, we're not going to. We're talking and different groups are talking, you in the back rooms, but my assumption is you don't get to DHS, you don't get to education, you don't get to those big six, if you will, until we get down and figure out whether we're going to expand Medicaid or not. My assumption is that doesn't happen until the governor gets back from D.C. and his visit with Sebelius. We're moving maybe slow, but not horribly slow. We're getting stuff out. Sometimes we snag up. One of the things I think that we're doing in budget is we got some freshmen who are members of budget, and that's fairly unusual, though it's becoming more usual. Mm-hmm. And they're in a learning curve. They're trying to figure out what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so sometimes we get hung up with questions and dealing with that, but that's important that we all have some understanding of what we're doing. So I'm not uptight about it at this point. And you may remember when I chaired special language, we met at 6:30 one time, and I have no problem with meeting, coming back after we adjourn and meeting till 9 or 10 at night to take care of business when that time comes.
Let's pull ourselves back to Medicaid for a little bit. The governor, as you indicated, is going to go meet with the federal Department of Human Services, Health and Human Services Secretary. What question do you want answered? What would help you understand what the Medicaid budget picture will look like? What's the resolution that you need?
Well, I think from the budget point of view, we know that it's 100% funding through 17 and then 90% through 20. But I think that one of the things that the governors and the Department of Human Services tell us is that expansion helps fill in the deficit. And you know that, you remember that deficit started out at a $400 million two or three years ago, and then it was 300, now it's 61 now. And there's some who doubt that it's that much, but I think until we know whether we're gonna get some help out of the expansion, I just think that we're hung up there until we know what we're doing there.
Do you think that the political will is there among 75% of the Senate, 75% of the House to expand Medicaid? I can tell you from my vantage point, I don't see that.
If you're asking me if we voted on it this afternoon, would it pass? It wouldn't come anywhere close, I don't think. I think it's that. But I think there are a goodly number of legislators on both sides of the aisle who are waiting for the answers to their questions that they've given Governor Beebe and that he is going to talk to Sebelius about, try to bring some answers back. So I don't know that it passes ever, but we got to get to a point that we're willing to say yay or nay. Let's either say yes, we're going to do it and move on, or let's say no, we're not going to do it and move on. I don't know how long we can just continue to talk about it without just getting on with business.
And you think this Sebelius meeting with the governor is what's going to give you guys that direction?
Well, I think that if the governor gets some legitimate give from Sebelius, and I don't know what that give is, maybe in a perfect world for some, it would be that he lets you lower it from 138 to 100%. There are other schools, other factions who would like to see something different. But I do think that legislators need to I was in a meeting where they posed a whole bunch of questions to him. And most of them good, valid questions. They want their questions answered. One question that I don't understand is when we talk about that if we don't expand Medicaid, that those people between 100% of poverty and 138% of poverty would then be able to get coverage on the exchange,
correct,
on the health exchange at a subsidized rate. Now, oftentimes I hear people say that rate would be $26 or $29 or $50. The numbers I've seen projected for the exchange, like for a 50-year-old woman, $1,500 a month. Now, even with a whole bunch of subsidy, you're not going to get that down to $26 or $50 or whatever. So that was the question I posed is, Governor, is it true that if we don't expand and if these people between 100 and 138%, and as you know, we're talking about the working poor. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people who make minimum wage or barely over that. Is it true that those people, those constituents of mine, are going to be able to go to the exchange and buy insurance for $25 a month? I just, in my mind, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. You remember in real life, I am an independent insurance agent, small agent, don't sell a lot of health insurance, but I just don't see anybody going and buying a $25 insurance policy, even with a federal
subsidy.
Too
big of a gap.
Yeah.
Too big of a gap. Do you think this Medicaid issue is just too challenging, too difficult for you guys to make a decision one way or the other? Do you think it could get to the point where you still don't have enough clarity from the feds, and you just say, it's time for us to just decide. We can't make a decision on this based on what we have. Let's don't do it.
Well, I hope at some point we vote, just so we can say, yeah, we did try it, or no, we didn't. You know, yes, we want to do this, or no, we didn't. But I do think if we don't get the answers that some of them want from Sebelius, if we don't get some give from her, if the governor doesn't bring home some sort of give in the program, that it's very unlikely we'll get it done.
Where do you personally stand on the concept?
I've not staked out any ground yet, but let me just tell you, I am a rural advocate. you know, I'm a product of rural Arkansas. I represent rural Arkansas, and I love rural Arkansas. I already am very aware of the healthcare problems that we have in rural Arkansas. It's a long way to the hospital. It's a long way to specialists. And I believe that if we don't expand it, our few remaining rural hospitals are going to be at risk. So it's I haven't staked out my ground yet because I don't know as much as I want to know about it. Mm-hmm. But it'll be hard for me to be against it because I understand that if we lose our rural hospitals, we've brought our last job to rural Arkansas, our last corporate job. And that when a corporation who has a plant in Nashville is looking to expand and they're checking off their checklist over where to do that, and they look and see there's no health care in Nashville or there's no health care in wherever, then they're going to set that aside and move on to the next plant where there is health care for their employees.
Ruby Rock talked to Larry Teague, co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee at the state legislature at the state capitol last week. You can hear more at talkbusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at aecc.com.
Syria is one of the militant group Hezbollah's most important backers. Along with Iran, they're known as the Shiite Axis. But after 2 years of civil war, the future of Shiites in a Sunni-dominated Arab world is in question. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Dexter Filkins considers the future of Hezbollah if Syria's regime falls. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Do you like strawberries?
I do.
Well, strawberries are in the news today. There has been a recent $3 million donation made by the Walmart Foundation to the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. The grant will enhance sustainable production of strawberries. University officials say it means better access for shoppers to quality strawberries and better profitability for the farmers growing the crops. We'll have more on this, I hope, on a future edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes, you seemed very excited about this.
I am. It's interesting because the idea is sustainable strawberries.
Right.
So I know that sometimes strawberry growers, especially late winter, early spring, mm-hmm. have some problems because of the wind, you know.
Right, the cold and such. Look outside today.
Exactly.
This is an example.
Exactly.
Also in the news this morning, I saw on the Fayetteville Flyer
yes.
that our own Mike Shirky has booked a series of concerts on Dixon Street this spring at the 324 Ballroom, which I've seen. It's kind of behind
Jose's
and
right.
Smoking Barrel in that area.
Right.
And it's a couple of shows beginning March 1st with Chuck Brodsky.
Chuck Brodsky, who Mike has brought to town before and is...
You were also excited about
yes,
this.
Yes, I was. Fantastic singer-songwriter. He's a big baseball fan and writes some songs about baseball as well. I think his music has been on display and included the Baseball Hall of Fame at Cooperstown.
It is.
Oh, okay. There you go.
There you go. And some other upcoming shows over the next couple of months. Steve Smith and Hard Road on May 24th. Hot Club of Cowtown on June 11th.
Buy your tickets early for that mm-hmm. one. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah. Brennan Lee on June 14th and Slade Cleaves on June 22nd.
Slade Cleaves, also someone that Mike's brought here quite a few times and usually sells out very quickly.
Right. And if you can't make those shows, you can always listen to Mike Shirky's radio show, The Pick and Post, which airs Saturdays at 7 here on KUAF.
And a salute to the guys at Fayetteville Flyer.
Mm-hmm.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, Hakeem Balabas. He's a documentary filmmaker who grew up in Morocco and now lives in Chicago. He's in Northwest Arkansas this week as part of the Caravanserai's mission to bridge cultures. He's talking to high school students in Fayetteville and Bentonville today. He'll screen two of his films tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. Later on this program, he talks about the difficulties of getting just the right information into a film.
Dr. John Kantner, archaeologist at the School for Advanced Research in Santa Fe, New Mexico, will give a talk tonight as part of the Stigler Lecture Series at the University of Arkansas. His talk, entitled Chaco Canyon from the Outside Looking In, refers to an area in northwestern New Mexico that is now close to the area called the Four Corners, where four states touch. 1,000 years ago, this arid and relatively empty area was a bustling and vibrant center, complete with more than 100 buildings.
The general consensus about Chaco Canyon is that it was a ceremonial center, perhaps a pilgrimage center, and people came from many, many miles around and brought things like corn and timbers and pots. They even imported things like chocolate and macaws from Mesoamerica, copper bells, turquoise. Anything that was of value from many, many miles around came into the canyon. And so when we say from the outside looking in, not only is it us looking at it today, but it's also thinking about how people back then who were living in small farming villages scattered all over the area, what is it about the canyon that they found so compelling that they were interested in bringing in their best resources into this really desolate area.
Kantner says there are a few different theories as to what drew people to Chaco Canyon, which he will discuss in his talk tonight. One of the more popular ones is that there were very powerful leaders, perhaps priests, that were residing in the center that helped to guide the happenings there, including the construction.
One idea is that people who came in on these pilgrimages, part of fulfilling their ceremonial obligations would have been actually contributing their labor as well as their resources towards the center. So people would come in. One important note about the canyon is there are no trees in the canyon, but there's all these buildings. So all the timbers, it's estimated that perhaps 200,000 timbers had to be hand-carried across the desert. There were no beasts of burden. And so people are bringing in these timbers to roof the buildings and then perhaps contributing their labor to building the masonry work, to plastering the buildings, to repairing the buildings, as well as any other numbers of things. We know, for example, that they built these roadways, these massive roadways that go dozens of miles across the desert, and people had to contribute their labor to do that as well. So that's one thought, is that there was these very powerful priestly leaders that were in charge.
In addition to the awesome construction of these ceremonial buildings, one of the most intriguing things about Chaco Canyon is that it was an incredibly vibrant cultural and ceremonial center where thousands of people flocked to, but it ended abruptly and violently. Kantner says that it is important and useful to studying how these pinnacles of civilization fell apart.
And in that case, it's probably a combination of the social and political structure that they had built up in the face of environmental change that challenged the ability of their social and political structure to contend with it. And I think these are lessons that are important for us to know today, because, of course, we are sort of at a pinnacle of. And we know that there are climate changes taking place, whatever caused by, but we know that they're challenging us. And I think archaeologists can look back at all these societies that once thrived and then fell apart and use those lessons to contend with what we're facing today or in the future.
Dr. John Kantner will present Chaco Canyon from the Outside Looking In, 6:30 tonight in Giffel's Auditorium. Talk is part of the Department of Anthropology's Stigler Lecture Series in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. We'll have an extended version of his conversation with Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large. It is Tuesday, February 26th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Still shocked every time you say 2013.
Well, it's been about six
yeah,
or seven weeks.
Yeah, I'm a little
weeks.
Behind.
Okay.
I'll catch up.
All right.
And if you've been behind on going to Fellini in February
one
at Mullins Library, tonight's the last chance. Tonight is La Dolce Vita. Sophia Loren?
Yes, Sophia Loren. This is the movie that gave us the word paparazzi.
There you go. And the movie you were trying to think of the name of last week.
That's the one.
It is free. You should show up at 6 o'clock at Mullins Library at the University of Arkansas. Or another audition opportunity. I'm trying to figure out if I can find time to do this. Mm-hmm. Auditions tonight at 6 o'clock in the music room at Burns Hall at NWAC for Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, okay.
The musical.
Love the show. Love the show. Should be fun. And auditions tonight for Steel Magnolias at Fort Smith Little Theater in the River Valley. Those start at 7 o'clock. If you've always wanted to do it, there's no day like today.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Foundation.
Support for KUAF comes from Culligan of Northwest Arkansas, offering drinking water and a variety of water treatment products and services available for home or business. Products include water softeners, filtration systems, reverse osmosis drinking water systems, plus bottled water and softener salt delivery. 717-2960 or hallswater.com for more information.
The Caravanserai program is designed to introduce a deeper understanding of Middle Eastern and Muslim cultures to American cities. Each year, the project selects a few cities to host dance, music, and film presentations. Northwest Arkansas is a participant this year. There has already been one musical performance at Walton Arts Center, and there will be another this spring. This week, Hakeem Balabas is here to discuss his documentaries. He'll show two of them tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's a free screening. It includes his first, A Nest in the Heat, which was about his challenge to tell his family he didn't plan to return to his hometown in Morocco. It's a poignant study into place, family, and responsibility, one that an audience almost anywhere on the planet could relate to almost instantly. Yesterday, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about his work on documentaries. He says the key is understanding you never know where a project might go.
Every time I've been put to the test of following a script, within the second day of shooting, I throw it away. And this happens the last time. It happened mainly because I got involved in writing this story of the myth of the two lovers of Isli and Tisilt in the High Atlas Mountains. And I wrote that with a couple of friends, one from here, from Chicago, and another one in Morocco who lived in that space, in Emil Shil, it's called. What I realized since 2005 that I've been going back and forth to visit is that I was mainly focused on locations. I was focused on the space. I was focused on everything except the people. And once I realized that, I felt so, I just felt like I was the most obnoxious person in the world. And you know what ended up happening? We were trying to apply for funding for the film. We didn't get anything. And maybe that was the best thing that could have happened to this film, because I ended up recording and editing the process of searching for that myth. And then the casting session, I had an actor and an actress who were supposed to play the parts of the lovers. And I was looking at doing like the Franco Zeffirelli version, Moroccan version of Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm. Literally, my wife wants me to do that so we can make some money. and so instead, during the casting session, I just happened to ask my actress one question about what was happening in her life now, or if she had anything to share with us in terms of her love life. And that just opened the floodgates, because the actors then became subjects of this film, where they were sent to this place to research their parts, and that's what we're shooting. And the idea that, you know, we may be making the film.
So it becomes sort of this meta experience.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, the film is called Defining Love, A Failed Attempt, because of the numerous ways that hit us of the real definition of love that, you know, I literally ignored.
While you're here, you'll be talking to high school students in Fayetteville and Bentonville, mm-hmm. having a workshop. What do you do in those sessions? What can...
I was talking about ways, how do you teach film now?
And well, how you can do it on your phone.
Exactly. And how do you catch up with new students? Let's say, you know, I know that there's no film department per se at the university mm-hmm. here. And somebody was asking the right question, well, why? And how do you do it? How do you teach that? I remember when I first got into, you know, film school, it took me 3 months to learn depth of field and the f-stop and to get exposed to the whole thing about light and cinematography and storytelling, screenwriting, all this stuff. Now, I think, you know, young filmmakers or students come in with this notion that they have something that's already acquired instinctively, and most of the time they are right, because, you know, if you use your iPhone or whatever phone you have, smartphone, then you can make your own films. And it seems to me like we have to maybe accompany that. I'm doing the experiment with my daughter now, where she you'd send them out to tell a story, and then when they come back, you work off of what they have done to teach them about lighting, to teach them about storytelling, to teach them about cinematography, and most of all, to teach them about editing, because it's a whole package, I guess.
And then you have the whole thing about responsible editing and making sure that you're telling what was happening.
You're telling what was happening, but you're telling it also from your own point of view. I think what ends up lost in this whole, you know, I don't know if you can call something visual a cacophony, but maybe yes. You have to remind yourself and maybe remind your students that you have to do it from within. So I usually do an exercise with some students of mine, or when I go back to Morocco, do like some master classes in very remote areas. And the exercise is always to ask students to come up with an image that is essential to them. And most of the time, people will start telling you stories instead of that one image. But when that hits, like, I'll give you an example. I had one student in some remote area in Morocco who, after 5 days of really looking for that image, came back, and then he said, I think I have one. Okay, the eyes of the little puppy that I was supposed to kill. And everybody was like, oh, okay. Well, no, their eyes open. And it's only because you cannot be, you know, in the definition of cinema verite of the 60s, you can't be the fly on the wall. You're just observing, you're just there, or you just work there. You have to be involved. You have to have a point of view. And it's a point of view that can change. I mean, I know that sometimes when I look at Nest in the Heat that you just watched, that was my thesis film. I'm very embarrassed. But then I can see the seeds of a voice, as seeds of something that was struggling to say, you know what, I have this stuff that I have not resolved yet, but I'm interested in sharing it. I'm interested in exploring that with other people. And if the response is what you started with, then I think, oh, maybe there's something there.
Gosh, but it seems such a thin line, because I think of Werner Herzog, who really at times can involve himself in the film. And sometimes it's just jarring. It's like, it's taken me out of the film.
It does. That's.
But that's probably maybe what he wants.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but to me, it's when I'm editing, I'll be very honest with you. I mean, I think there are more days when I'm totally depressed because of a cut that I've made, and that's because I always think that I have maybe crossed a line. And that line, for me, is always about people's or other people's dignity. Whether they are subjects in your documentary, whether they are actors that you've paid, is always something. You used a very important word earlier. You said something about manipulation. There are a lot of people who have no problem manipulating you and saying this is what it is. You know, there are filmmakers like Abbas Kiarostami from Iran. I mean, and the notion is that we're lying. You know, Fellini says that about himself also, that once you introduce a camera, because there's this mic now in front of me and I'm talking to you, I somehow have to struggle in every step of the way. Like, every step of the way, I have to struggle with this notion of, am I performing for you and for your audience, or am I being truthful?
Is this the same conversation we'd have at a coffee shop?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. If or is this the same conversation I'd be having with myself, you know, this
right.
morning when I was like, okay, gosh, you know, what's going to happen with this interview? What am I going to do these, you know, 3 days? And you just hope that, and that's the only thing you have going for you. It's that line of being a bit truthful and being honest about what you're doing.
Okay, last question then. You struggle. You have this struggle. You're depressed during the editing. You're thinking about this. It can become an existential exercise.
Yeah, it is.
But then someone may watch this and not, and they're kind of half watching. I mean, does that bother you?
Of course it does. Okay. But at the same time, you know, and this is the thing where, like, your references help a little bit. You know, John Cassavetes used to live right on top of the movie theater where he used to show his films, and he used to go out, run after people who would leave the first 5 minutes. It's devastating to you. I mean, you can have... No, I was in Tangier 3 weeks ago for this film festival. It was the first time the film was going to be shown to a Moroccan audience. People have expectations of what you can do because you have a name or whatever. And then, you know, one person walks out and it kills you. And in this case, I mean, the guy just went to the bathroom and came back. But then you know, the screening ends and you start hearing what people have to say and you start thinking the best stuff is when somebody's reading into your work things that you've never, ever meant for the film to be, but then they find the connections. And that's, again, to me, just proves that there is this common ground where we all can find ourselves, which has to do with this almost mystical truth. I want to call it like a moment of enlightenment. And, you know, I'll confess this. Most of those moments when I make my films, I have never written, so I cannot say it's my doing. I think I may have arranged the puzzle a little bit. I may have moved things along the way. And I guess I may be willing and ready to receive that stuff when it happens. There are, you know, examples I can tell you. We were shooting this one scene by the lakes in the High Atlas Mountains. The DP is upset because we're losing light. My actors are cold because I've been throwing them in the water and then bringing them out. We have to, you know, there's a little bit of traffic, but once you have one car that goes by, the sound person is yelling at you. So we can't get the scene. And I'm thinking, it's an exposition scene. It really doesn't matter if we lose it. But I can't say that to my crew because I would lose credibility. I look back, and then I see this man who's walking towards us and who's wearing a blanket with pieces of plastic around his feet. And it hit me so hard because I remember a few years back, I had actually started shooting something about these people that in Morocco they call people who take God's roads. And they're almost like pilgrims. And what I found out in most cases that these are people who have somehow been abandoned. And it's always a love story, whether it's, you know, related to a parent or to a woman or a man or whatever. But there are people who roam the country on roadsides. And I thought, and this is this whole thing about being obsessed with one theme. I'm thinking, okay, this thing about faith, this thing about unconditional love, are we capable? Are we not capable of that? Whatever I'm doing now that's structured means nothing next to what I just looked back and saw this man walking towards us. So I begged for everybody to move away, and we turned our camera towards this man, and he was walking right over towards our actors, and I just let it play. And what ends up happening is a scene that I'm so proud I was offered, but that I know. I mean, I hope I can catch other scenes like that in the future, but that one scene, I know that I was just lucky that it happened.
Hakeem Balavas is a documentary filmmaker from Chicago and a native of Morocco. He is in Northwest Arkansas this weekend as part of the Caravan Sarai program. He'll screen two of his films tomorrow night at the Fayetteville Public Library. He spoke with Kyle yesterday.
This is Ozarks at Large, and as is our recent custom, we're spending a few minutes on the fourth Tuesday of the month outlining theater offerings for the next few weeks. In a moment, how actors at the Art Center of the Ozarks are bringing a colorful, popular children's book to the stage. Go Dog Go has dogs, music, more dogs, ballet, hats, cars, and still more dogs. We'll have a preview in just a few minutes. This weekend, the University of Arkansas's production of Tennessee Williams' classic, A Streetcar Named Desire, will end with shows Wednesday through Saturday nights at 8 and a final Sunday matinee at 2. Keep in mind that while Blanche relied on the kindness of strangers, the production is recommended for patrons 17 years or older. Mature audiences are also the target for an interesting play at the University of the Ozarks in Clarksville this weekend. The drama Good Boys and True by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa is staged Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. The play takes place in the late 80s at a prestigious prep school and explores what happens when a damaging videotape is uncovered. The Chicago Reader called the script a masterful mystery, compassionate character study, and moving love story all in one. The production is in the Black Box Theater on the U of O campus. Doors open for seating at 7 each night. More information may be found at ozarks.edu/theater. The play does involve adult language and sexual themes. The All Ages Miss Nelson is Missing will be presented 5 times between March 7th and March 10th by Arts Live Theater in Fayetteville. The production, based on the 1977 book of the same title, examines the fate of Classroom 207 after the beloved but underappreciated teacher Miss Nelson is replaced with a substitute teacher with none of Miss Nelson's charm or caring ways. For more information, artslivetheater.com. Children are at the core of the play God of Carnage, presented by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Theater Department, March 7th, 8th, and 9th. The play, first produced in French, then adapted into English, is about two sets of parents. The child of one has hurt the child of the other at a park. The parents attempt to discuss the situation in civil terms, but their back and forth devolves into chaos. The three performances are at Breedlove Auditorium and begin at 7:30 each night of the run. For one night in Fort Smith, you can take in 102 years of Broadway. The National Touring Company presenting Neil Berg's Review will be on stage March 5th. That's a week from tonight at 7:30 at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center. It includes members of casts of Broadway stalwarts like The Phantom of the Opera, South Pacific, and Fiddler on the Roof, and includes numbers from those shows and many others. The presentation is part of the UAF Season of Entertainment 32. And Rogers Little Theater embraces a switcheroo concept with Goodbye Charlie late this month and early next. When the title character is bumped off by a jealous husband, he's reincarnated as a woman. The original Broadway production of George Axelrod's comedy starred Lauren Bacall. A 1964 film version inserted Debbie Reynolds into the lead, and a much later version, titled Switch, had Ellen Barkin. There was also a failed TV sitcom starring Suzanne Summers. The Rogers Little Theater's take on Goodbye Charlie is March 29th through the 31st, and again April 4th through the 7th. More information at rogerslittletheater.org. More than 50 years ago, a simple book, Go Dog Go, was first published and captured the attention of the last toddlers of the baby boom. P.D. Eastman's book helped the youngest set learn colors, counting, and words. But this was no Dick and Jane. There was a chaotic tint to the dogs on the pages. Dogs riding a Ferris wheel or bicycles or driving jalopies around the countryside.
It seems to be a little bit of a free-for-all.
Danny Hobson teaches reading and beginning drama at Hellstrom Middle School in Springdale. He's also the director of the Art Center of the Ozarks production of Go Dog Go in March. It's a musical based on the book.
The book, as well as the play, seem to build, you know, in, you know, kind of energy, but also they seem to be building towards something. You're definitely, you know, learning new words and new colors, and but it just seems to build. These cars, you know, come in and they start going faster, and, you know, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and then finally, you know, it builds up to the big dog party. So it seems to just kind of jump around and go from one place to another, but it all kind of culminates at the end with this big celebration.
The building energy is found even in the title of the book and the play. The punctuation is go, comma, dog, period, go, exclamation point. One of the challenges to translating the book to stage, the props. Not just the cars driven by the dogs, but the hats. A recurring bit in the book has a pink dog constantly seeking approval from a friend for her hats, and the hats become increasingly extravagant. Danny Hobson says this was a chance to have fun.
The most popular hats will be worn by Hattie, who is the pink dog in the book. the people who turned this book into a musical named her Hattie, because she comes out with multiple hats, and that's kind of her thing. So she will come out with multiple hats, and each one of them just kind of builds on itself and gets bigger and bigger, more extravagant, and just very crazy at the very end, very entertaining.
Everything on stage in Springdale, the crazy hats, the multicolored costumes, the props, will be created in-house. And there's also a ballet.
We can do a little introduction, and then Janice is going to have to say, a dog over the water. And then whenever it sounds right.
An episode in the book, when two dogs are enjoying a moonlight night in a rowboat, has been turned into a water ballet.
In the book, you have dogs swimming underwater. So they've kind of taken that page, those pages, and they've turned them into a ballet scene. And so fortunately, one of our dogs that is going to be up there, kind of the main dog doing the ballet, she has kind of a, she has experience with ballet, which is nice. So, but we'll have Allison Strickland will be here, and she's going to help us choreograph that as well.
This version of Go Dog Go was created 20 years ago by Stephen Dietz for the Seattle Children's Theater and has become a favorite around the country. The music for the show seems spot on for the era in which the book was first published, 1961. Playful jazz-inspired tunes that might have just been as at home in a Tony Curtis or David Niven film from the same time.
Go Dog Go!
Go has been described as deceptively simple because higher concepts are being introduced to the young readers along with the short words and colors. Relationships grow as certain characters meet for a second or third time, and the very basis of how a narrative is constructed is on display. With ballet, elaborate costumes, and a musical score, the stage version also has plenty going on. Again, Danny Hobson, the director for the performance at Art Center of the Ozarks.
That is the amazing thing, is that we can start off with a concept. And, you know, as the director, you know, I have kind of a vision that I would like to see, but I'm able to talk to, you know, Harry Blundell, and I'm able to talk to the people that are working with my music, Marta Holt and Denise Richards. So we're able to kind of bounce ideas off one another. And then obviously the costume team and especially the actors. What's great is that once you get through auditions and you cast the show and you sit down with these actors the first time, you have the opportunity to just kind of talk about it. And I talk about my vision, and they kind of throw out ideas. And even during, you know, rehearsals, I mean, things that I haven't even thought of, they're able to say, hey, what if we try this right here?
The hard work will be on display at the Art Center of the Ozarks March 9th and 10th at 3 each afternoon. You can learn more at artcenteroftheozarks.org. And before we end our survey of area stage offerings for the next few weeks, a couple more reminders. Theater Squared's production of Sons of the Prophet is closing after 5 more shows, Thursday night through Sunday night at Nadine Baum Studios in downtown Fayetteville. And the Fort Smith Little Theater will present Steel Magnolias in early April. This is Ozarks at Large.
Have you ever asked yourself, am I going crazy?
The notion is that if you see things or hear things, you're going mad. But as a physician, I have to try and define what's going on and to reassure people that they're not going insane.
I'm Guy Raz, the place between madness and sanity. It's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour from NPR with new host Guy Raz, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
KUAF is supported by Aurora Technologies, offering digital signage and menu boards for businesses and organizations of all sizes. Televisions or projectors can display your message, graphics, animated images, or videos at desired locations. More information is available at auroratechnologies.net.
And the forecast, cold tonight, still maybe some flurries, but nothing about
accumulation.
Okay.
You disappointed that there wasn't more snow?
I mean, I always want more snow, you know, because who doesn't want a snow day?
Right, right.
But, I mean, I was surprised when I woke up this morning that we got as much as what we did.
Well, you know, you live in Rogers in Benton County. What was on the ground at your house?
There's probably about an inch or so.
Okay.
I mean, the roads were pretty much clear. I mean, they were wet. I think it was warm enough that it just melted. And, I mean, the snow just came right off my car. But it looked like, I mean, there was a good amount. The ground was covered. Yeah. It was really pretty.
Yeah, very pretty. We had about maybe half an inch.
Oh, okay. I think we got more up north. So.
Yes, I think so. And then, of course, Carroll County, because Berryville and then Gravette and Pea Ridge and some of those schools were out today.
They were. They were. Because it started, I know it started sleeting at my house last night around 10 or 10:30. So I was a little concerned about the roads this morning, but they were fine.
Yeah. And the 10-day forecast indicates no more chances for snow in February. Don't rule out March. I remember the first day of spring about 3 years ago, we had a significant snowfall. So we're not out of the woods yet as far as it comes to winter precipitation. But time is growing nigh.
Did you have a good weekend? I realized I didn't talk to you yesterday.
I did. Boy, I was busy. I had I was fortunate enough, honored to call Arkansas Razorback baseball in Chuck Barrett's absence Friday and Saturday afternoon at Palm Stadium, and then filled in for Andrew Reynolds for the Razorback women's game against Tennessee at Bud Walton Sunday afternoon before going to Sun Soup Sunday afternoon.
Always talking, can't shut you up.
You know, literally, I was losing my, when you saw me yesterday morning, my voice was going.
Mm-hmm. When I saw you Sunday at Soup Sunday, your voice was going.
Yeah, because all I did this weekend was talk. Which isn't much different from a usual weekend for me, except, you know, the baseball games, because when Chuck and Rick go on basketball, I'm it.
Right.
So I don't have a color commentator.
Oh.
So I start thinking from pregame to the end of the game, the postgame, I'm probably talking nonstop, 60-second breaks here and there for commercials, nonstop for like 4 hours. And so I did that, and then it's about 3 hours on basketball, and then at Soup Sunday, I'm a person who chats a lot. So
sure. I mean, I didn't talk nonstop, but I feel like I was going nonstop this weekend. I did all sorts of things. Went to the UARC Bowl to see AJ Finney, a comic, come through. He was really good.
Good.
I'd missed him the first time he came through, so I'm
you
glad I got to see
him on
see
the
that.
Air the last time.
I did, and so I was really glad I got to see him this time. And then went across the street when that was over to George's. Got to see Sean James perform,
who'd been
in the studio,
right.
Which is why I wanted to go see him, because Katie had done the interview and I didn't get to be a part of that, so I was curious to see him perform live, and it was good to see him. He had some people on stage with Andy Frasco.
Yes.
He opened for Andy Frasco, and Andy Frasco had some local people playing for him, Corey Montgomery and a percussionist from, I think, Groovement, whose name escapes me. So that was a fun show. And then Saturday night, got to go to the Art Center of the Ozarks ball, which was Flappers and Fellas. It was a good time.
Excellent.
Got to make use of that flapper outfit I had from Halloween a few years ago. So that was a good time. And then, of course, Sunday was Soup Sunday, and that seemed like it went well. All kinds of food. I was, pretty exhausted.
And here's the thing, that this is not an anomaly now for the weekends from now until about Christmas.
Right.
Everything's going now.
Oh, yeah. And you're going away.
I'm going away. I'm going with the baseball team again to call 4 games in Surprise, Arizona, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I'll be out of the studio for the rest of this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then next week I'll be gone for a few days to call the women's SEC basketball tournament in Atlanta.
That'll be fun. So kind of a work vacation. I mean, it's working, but a vacation.
Yes.
So
you'll still hear my voice in some of the stories. I have a two-part interview with John McDonald coming up
this
week.
Something to look forward to.
Yes, plenty of stuff.
You seemed pretty excited about that one.
I was. It was a great interview. Talked to James Galway, Sir James Galway, earlier this
morning.
That's
right.
You'll hear that next week.
Excellent.
Yes.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Gravette.
Gravette.
Hello to all the students who got the day off
today. That's right. Congratulations. Hey, and thanks to you, Christina, Timothy, Katie, and Jacqueline for making it possible for me to bug out for a few days. I do appreciate that. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and Christina together
we will
with a brand new edition of Ozarks. I'll be in Arizona.